Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
Podcasts. Now?
For antiques.
For antiques. For you.
Today, we will be talking about pottery.
Just like in general? Wow, this is gonna be a long one.
Now you may say, but you did like a 6-episode series on pottery a year ago.
Yeah, that's right, we did.
Is there anything else to say about pottery? Yes.
Well, always, yeah.
Because in April of 2010...
Oh, recent.
Bonham's Auction House in London, New Bond Street, had a lot of 3 Staffordshire pottery pieces circa 1828.
Oh, Staffordshire, so close.
Yes. Each piece comes on its own little footstool-looking stage with 4 feet. The first piece is a man and a woman, the man in a top hat, green coat, and yellow trousers with his arm around the woman's shoulders. The woman in a floral patterned gown, green shawl, and black apron with one arm over her waist. They are holding hands. This piece is about 8 inches tall and labeled W. Quarter and M. Martin. The second piece is a thatch-roofed barn, helpfully labeled the Red Barn.
Whoa, wouldn't have guessed.
It's about 8.8 inches high, so really 9 inches. The auction listing describes it as flanked by bocage, or bocage.
Okay.
Which is ceramic jargon for ornamental foliage providing structural support, in this case, stylized oak trees flanking the barn. A cow and 2 chickens are grazing out in front of it. The woman is on the leftmost edge of the platform, and the man is opening the barn door inward and gesturing towards the woman.
Okay.
You can tell from their clothing that they are very clearly the same figures as in the other 2 pieces.
They sure are.
The third and final piece is the man standing alone with 1 hand on his chest and 1 hand in his pocket, Alanis Morissette style, labeled W. Quarter before the judge. And it's 7.7 inches tall.
That's misleading because the way I'm looking at him right now, there's an image in front of me, by the way, it looks like he's standing before the barn.
Why is this man standing before a judge anyway?
Well, I don't know.
All 3 pieces are brightly colored and largely intact. So how much did they fetch at auction?
Oh, Staffordshire, a very unusual subject matter. It's narrative in some way. 9,000?
You are shockingly close. 11,760 pounds, or $14,936.
Yeah, you know, that wasn't too shabby of a guess.
You did very well. It's almost as though you have 15 years of experience in the antiques industry.
It's like, I know.
It's like, you're good at this. Huh. But why?
That's a pretty high price.
Why 14K? Because these 3 pieces all together depict the Red Barn murder.
I'm sorry, what?
The Red Barn murder.
But they're all alive. I'm looking at them.
They are. Well, here's the thing. In this particular photo, the pieces are arranged from left to right in the order I described them.
Yes.
So you see, it starts out with the man and the woman, and a man leading a woman into a barn, and then a man by himself with a caption stating he is standing before the judge.
Oh dear, he killed the woman in the barn.
Got it in one, Sherlock.
Is this the first piece of true crime memorabilia?
Not the first, but one of the earlier ones.
Why would Staffordshire make this?
Let us learn further, shall we?
Well, yeah.
So the Red Barn murder. In 1827, in Polstead, in Suffolk, England.
Okay, yeah. We'll just pretend that's a real place.
Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of sounds fake but okay English names in this episode. W. Quarter is William Quarter, and he is a farmer and notorious pig thief.
What a life! You have to live to get that.
He is in a relationship with Maria Martin, depicted in the figurines as M. Martin.
Oh dear.
She is already a single mom with 2 illegitimate children. In her relationship with Quarter, she bears his child as well, and this child dies under murky circumstances.
Oh dear.
That are glossed over in light of what follows. Martin really, really, really wants Quarter to put a ring on it, because she's sick of being illegitimate in early 19th century England.
Yep.
So Corden's like, okay, meet me at the Red Barn and we'll elope from there.
Oh dear. No, no, look, see, if a man says he'll marry you if only you step into his barn, that's a red flag.
I'll absolutely marry you as soon as you follow me through my knife hall where I store all of my knives.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, oh, of course I'll marry you, honey. Come with me into the deep, 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 dark woods. And you're like, okay, yeah. It's legit. That's how most women get married, right?
For sure. So she's like, when? When the fuck are we going to elope?
When?
When? And he's like, Wednesday. No, wait, Thursday.
No.
No, wait, Friday. Friday for sure.
Oh, that's me talking to people on Tinder.
So on Friday, May 18th, 1827, we know the exact date, so that's a good sign.
Oh, dear.
Corder shows up at Martin's stepmother's house, and he's like, hey, fun story, the constable's coming to arrest you for having bastard children, because it's early 19th century England.
Wait, they're gonna arrest you for that? I thought they could just shame you very hard.
Oh yeah, no, it was legit illegal.
Ooh.
Whoopsies. So he's like, we gotta elope today! Quick, disguise yourself in men's clothes and meet me at the Red Barn.
Well...
And then he bounces.
Well, Natch, of course. Like, imagine going along... Well, I guess when you got the constable after you, I imagine you'd go through with a lot of things.
Yeah, he's kind of upped the stakes here. Yeah. So, Corder bounces, Martin follows afterwards, and that is the last time anyone sees her alive.
You know, I kind of thought that's how that sentence was going to end.
Yeah. One of those stories. Corder does come back, though. He shows up in town again.
Well, I wonder what happened.
A little while later, to tell Martin's family that she's in Ipswich and can't visit them.
Of course. Never comes back from Ipswich.
No. Also, no one can go visit her there.
Well, no one's allowed in Ipswich. We all know that.
The family starts receiving letters from her.
For her mysterious post in unattainable Ipswich, yeah.
With a bunch of reasons why she can't visit them and they can't visit her and why she doesn't write more regularly and why her handwriting doesn't look the same and why it doesn't sound anything like her.
Wait. She's writing letters where she's like, yeah, I know this looks like someone else is writing it like crazy, huh? Anyway, Ipswich is slid into like an alternate reality, so you can't like get here.
So Ipswich is Brigadoon.
Yeah, I'm in Brigadoon now. And like, they switched my hands, they put them on backwards, and that's why my, like...
She legit cites a hand injury in these letters.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Why every time I make a joke, does reality have to follow it so closely?
Meanwhile, Martin's stepmother Anne starts having dreams about Martin's ghost pointing at the Red Barn.
Jesus Christ, what?
She starts having dreams about Martin's ghost pointing at the Red Barn.
Well, that's normal.
That's normal and cool. So on April 19th, 1828, Anne persuades Martin's father to dig up the barn.
Dig up the barn?
Go into the barn. Start digging.
Oh, okay. I thought the barn was buried. Like, wow, he really covered his tracks.
He finds his daughter's remains buried in a sack.
Oh.
Yeah. With Corder's handkerchief around her neck.
What? Well, that's just arrogant.
I'm gonna blame her hand injury.
Yeah. I mean, that seems likely. She was trying to tie the kerchief, and then her damn hands started switching, like, sides very rapidly. And she's like, oh, dang, old, not again. And she choked herself. And he was like, well, she always said she wanted to be in the floor of the barn.
8 times a day she'd tell me that.
She's always saying, you know, when I die, bury me just at a random location inside the barn.
The handkerchief around her neck is extra weird because she's also been shot and stabbed.
What? Oh, her had that hand injury. You know, you're trying to dual wield a knife and a gun.
And then both your hands fall off and you choke yourself to death on a handkerchief.
Yeah, your hands fall off like a cheap Barbie doll and you're like, oh, damn. And then you trip and your handkerchief just wants. Oh, that's overkill. Why?
Well, seeking an answer to this question, the constable tracks Corder down.
Okay, well, at least they're on the other, like, well, I know exactly who did this.
They're like, hey, the guy who says she's moved to Ipswich and can't talk to anyone and also was the last person to see her alive, maybe we should check up what he's doing. He's since advertised in the newspaper for a new wife.
Great.
And opened a ladies' boarding house with her.
Oh my, this is like a, what is this, like Dexter Jr.?
Basically.
Like, what the? Was he even trying? Oh, I'm sorry. She moved to Ipswich and then broke both her hands. When it lifted up off the earth, you can't go there and her hands are broken. Anyway, I'm gonna go meet my new wife and all 10 of my successive wives after this one bites it. And everyone's just like, I wonder what happened.
The constable surprises him while he's boiling eggs in the parlor.
What an interesting detail. The constable's like, I remember it real well. He was boiling eggs. And you're just like, thanks.
They specifically say he was at breakfast in his dressing gown, timing the boiling eggs with his pocket watch.
What an idiot bitch nerd.
What else do you expect him to time the eggs with? Some kind of egged timer? Yeah,
fucking kitchen, like, had kitchen timers. A pocket watch, like, my god, this is a personal egg affair.
So he's arrested, obvs. And on August 7th, 1828, the trial begins.
Was he arrested for egg crime?
Yes, he was arrested for egg crimes. So the trial begins on August 7th.
Okay.
The hotels nearby were all booked up by July.
Yeah, here we go. It's a familiar story.
Hordes of people attend this trial because it's got everything. It's got the betrayed lover. It's got a fucking ghost telling you to dig up the body. It's got shot, stabbed, and strangled. It's got egg timers. It's got everything. Yes. Corder's defense.
Oh boy.
He met Martin in the barn, argued with her, and stormed off, leaving his pistol behind. Heard a shot, ran back, and found her dead, panicked, buried her, and scarpered.
Wait, did he not know? Did he forget about the knife?
The argument for the knife is that the stabbing wounds came from being dug up.
Oh yeah, I've just got that... You know, we knew we made a mistake when we got our...
Our dagger's shovel?
Yeah, our 5-inch long, thin, thin, like, pointy shovels. And it took forever. And it was almost, like, it was just weird because we were like, it felt like we were digging it up with, like, a knife.
So as you've adeptly pointed out, this doesn't explain her stab wounds or the handkerchief tied around her neck or Martin's little brother witnessing Corder walking into the barn with a pistol and out of it with a pickaxe.
Jesus.
So, shock of shocks, he's found guilty.
Amazing.
The jury takes 35 minutes to declare this.
Were 30 of those minutes just them going like, Jesus Christ, this asshole, huh?
I can only assume. It took them 5 minutes to decide and a half hour was a lunch break.
Yeah, they're just cradling their heads going like, oh my god.
This bitch. He is sentenced to death by hanging and post-mortem dissection.
Oh.
Because this was, and I swear to God we'll have an entire episode, if not a series of episodes on this, but this was the point in English history where they didn't have enough bodies to supply the medical college, so particularly horrible crimes were punished specifically by dissection after you were dead.
Oh, so there was definitely a doctor in the crowd clapping his hands gleefully when they were like, and he will also be dissected, and they were like, oh, good.
We're getting there. So at this point, Corder confesses, supreme air quotes around that. He claims he accidentally shot Martin in the eye during their argument.
How do you, what? Yeah, I was accidentally leveling my pistol at her head.
You know how, like, when you and I fight all the time and we're always armed and aiming our guns at each other's faces?
Every time. Yeah, you're just like, I don't want to go to the smoothie place. And then I've got the pistol and it's between your eyes and I'm like...
And then you shoot me in at least one of them. And yeah. I'm like, fine, we'll get smoothies.
Yeah, and I'm like, Ken, I can't believe this. Like, it's smoothie day. And I pull the trigger.
I like how your representation of one of our typical arguments is whether or not we get smoothies and not whether or not Transformers are just boxes in space.
But that's... Well, here's the thing. If you ever, ever do that again, I will. I didn't want to bring up an incident where that like might actually be tied back to me someday. By the way, before we check out the new Transformers movie, you want to like check out this barn?
You think we should stop by the barn before we talk about
Transformers? Yeah, I think we should stop by the barn.
Yeah, okay, sure. So on August 11th, 1828, Corder is hanged.
Thank God. And shot and stabbed.
Between 7,000 and 20,000 people come to watch, depending on which report you read.
Holy shit, wasn't that like the entire population of England at the time?
Basically. The corpse is taken back to the courtroom, partially dissected and put on display. Oh. Over 5,000 people walk through the courtroom to come and have a gander at it.
Well, partially because they only wanted to explore so far, or did they get like tired? They're like, it's been a big day.
I don't know why. They just... They just sliced open his abdomen to, like, the muscle later, and they were like, everyone, corpse parade, let's go!
And they were like, hey, wait, this is lit!
The next day, a complete postmortem happens.
Oh, so actually high likelihood that they were just like, wait, I want to get drunk.
Or like, wait, the 7 to 20,000 people who've gathered here really want to see this. Yeah. If we don't let them in, we'll all die. So Cambridge University physicians and students gather to do the real dissection for big boys. They hook a battery up to his muscles for some galvanic experiments.
Man, they did that a lot, right?
Like... Listen, they just figured out that you can make electricity do fun things to corpses. Like, Frankenstein is on the shelves at last, and, like, they're like, wait, this is amazing. Make him twitch again. They also have the skull phrenologically examined.
Oh, yeah, real science.
Real science at last. The overdeveloped areas of his skull are secretiveness, acquisitiveness, and destructiveness.
Well, that was not influenced at all by what they already knew.
Underdeveloped areas include benevolence and veneration.
Well...
Confirmation bias, I hardly know her.
No. They also had a serious overdevelopment in the aim. She's just constantly kill-shotting, like... They found out he couldn't pick up a gun without headshotting, like...
His DPS is insane.
His DPS was off the charts! His KD ratio was 1-1, actually. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yes, D.
Sorry,
His KD ratio was, in fact, 1-1.
So sorry. Everyone. God. Mom.
And yet, as irreverent as we're being now, we're not even being half as irreverent as the people of the 19th century.
No, I'm sure that there were some really great cartoons.
Because with this sensational murder trial came sensational souvenirs.
Oh no.
Over 1 million broadsides sold. These were one-page newspapers detailing the crimes, a poem about the crimes, a confession definitely penned by the murderer, not just a newspaper guy.
Yeah.
So over 1 million of those sold. The Red Barn itself becomes a tourist attraction.
Great. Ghoulish.
Eventually, everything but the frame is torn down and splintered into souvenir toothpicks.
Well, I only liked half of that statement.
The last frame remnants burned down in 1842.
Okay, what? Wait, was it just, like, incidental, or someone was like...
Incidental, I assume.
It's like, I hate this murder shed.
Don't we all? Plays about the murder are performed from the time of Corder's arrest on through the trial, which may have influenced the jury.
No, really?
Yeah.
Well, I saw in the play, he was definitely guilty. The man was up there going like, I'm him, and I did it. I don't know why they're Southern.
I was gonna say.
Is
that a fucking Arkansas transplant?
Yeah, yes, one American who was just like, well, I never. Holy shit. I go to Ipswich, but I just can't.
Martin's gravestone is chipped away for souvenirs.
Naturally.
Until it's just gone.
Wow, how many pebbles are just this guy's gravestone?
Her gravestone.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was his.
Yeah, no, it's even worse.
Oh, he didn't get buried. That's right.
Not for a while. We'll get into that.
Oh.
In the meantime, a lock of Martin's hair would go for 2 guineas.
Oh, that's really creepy.
A piece of the rope used to hang Corder was 1 guinea.
Yeah, I'd buy that, actually.
An Oxford Street shop displays Corder's ear with a chunk of scalp.
Well? Why, they're just... the doctor's just losing bits?
Kind of? Because Corder's skeleton is displayed in a glass case at the West Suffolk Hospital.
Oh, well, okay, it's medical.
And they rig up a mechanism to make it point at the donation box when people come near it.
Very fucking good, what? Gaze upon the grim countenance of the murderer. It's like, and consider giving us a dollar. So making that clickety-clack cartoon skeleton noise.
Sometime after that, Dr. John Kilner takes the skull from the case.
Kilner? Wait.
Yeah, no, I know.
Okay.
To add to his Red Barn memorabilia collection.
Wait, so he just took it?
Yeah.
He just grabbed it. He was like,
I'm a doctor. This is mine now.
Yeah, like, I didn't go to medical school to not steal. And you're like, wait, that's almost precisely what you did.
He gets a string of bad luck afterwards and determines the skull is cursed.
Or he's just an asshole.
So he finally gives it a Christian burial. Well, so a part of Corder at least eventually gets buried.
Okay. Good.
And most importantly, in Staffordshire, they start pumping out commemorative pottery.
That's weird, even for Staffordshire.
Including the Red Barn set that sold at Bonhams for 14k.
Wow.
This is not the only set.
What? This wasn't a one-off?
There were many, many Red Barn pieces made by craftspeople all over Staffordshire.
Oh boy.
The Bonhams lot comes from the Sherritt Pot Bank. They also made one on a much smaller scale, about 2 inches by 4 inches, featuring Corder and Martin with two chickens in front of the Red Barn, helpfully labeled Red Barn.
I never knew.
Most of these figures consist of either Corder, Martin, or the Red Barn itself in some combination. Interestingly, all of the Red Barns were based off a single illustration of the Red Barn. So they're all pretty accurate to the building itself.
Huh.
And also, I keep saying Red Barn. I don't know if it's just because the pottery is aged or what, but it's very clearly painted brown.
I feel like we're having a little bit of, like, is the dress white? Is the dress blue?
Okay, because it looks incredibly brown to me.
I see what you're seeing, honestly. It is a very ruddy brown. I'm seeing both, honestly. I could see both.
Okay. Most, if not all, of the Red Barn pottery is labeled, some with better spelling than others. There is one example that labels it Rad Barn.
Oh, I wish I had that one! This is a Red Barn where Lady died.
Yeah, that bit's not great.
It was an accident.
Yeah. I accidentally shot and stabbed and strangled her.
Accidentally shot her directly in the face.
It could happen to anybody. The spelling variations come down to spelling was not yet standardized.
We didn't know how to spell red. It's three letters.
Depending on the accent, you could spell it red.
Well, that's okay. Is our Arkansas transplant being helpful again? I'd say it's a rad barn.
Apologies to our Arkansas listeners.
It's like, I've never been anywhere.
You've been to Ohio, and that's something.
I went to actually just go back from New Orleans.
There you go. But it doesn't stop there.
No, well, it really should have, because they're all dead now.
Because we have to move on to the murders at Stanfield Hall.
No, it keeps happening.
On November 28th, 1848, Isaac Jermy and his son Isaac Jermy Jermy.
Well, I hope they're the ones that die. Let's just...
Jesus, T!
Isaac Jermy Jermy.
Yeah.
That's what naming convention is that?
The kind that gets you killed, apparently, because...
Repeat the surnames in case anyone was confused.
Because they are both shot dead in their mansion, Stanfield Hall, by James Bloomfield Rush, their tenant.
It was probably an accident.
He wanted to defraud them of their estate and pin the murder on rival claimants to the inheritance.
This is a little, actually, yeah, alright.
Collectible pottery produced includes...
Oh, my God.
Figurines of Rush and his mistress, Emily Sanford.
I really misinterpreted that first sentence.
Models of Stanfield Hall, Rush's farm called Potash Farm.
Potash.
Potash. And Norwich Castle, which is the burial place of executed Rush, and I am not confident on my pronunciation of Norwich.
How else would you say it?
Englishy?
Norwich.
One set sold at auction for £1,420 in July 2018.
Wow. What is it? Nice. Rad Hall.
Rad Hall. And then we get the Bermondsey Horror.
Oh, well, I wonder if this is going to be a good one. Good story, happy, pleasant, and nice.
On August 9th, 1849, Swiss maid Mary Manning and her husband Frederick George Manning murder her wealthy lover Patrick O'Connor.
Wow, what?
She married one guy, fucked another guy on the side. Her husband was like, hey, he has money. She was like, you're right, let's invite him over for dinner and murder him and bury him under the kitchen flagstones.
Wow.
The body is discovered because O'Connor went missing, and everyone knew he had gone over to the Manning's place to dine and never come back.
Well, like, that's rich people are always constantly telling everyone what they're about to go do.
And the body is discovered when cops notice one particular flagstone is a bit damp.
Excellent cop work. Excellent. That rock is wet. Oh, Christ, you killed him.
Like, well, they dug him up first. They were like, flagstones? Up? Okay, body. Oh, by the way, the Mennies get arrested. You'll never believe.
I can't believe.
The jury is required to include French and Swiss people due to Marie's background. Because they want to make sure she's judged by her peers.
It's not what that means. Okay.
She's found guilty anyway, and so was her husband.
Suck them in. She has done it.
Charles Dickens, in his journalism career, covers the hanging and condemns the bloodthirsty crowd that gathers to watch it.
I keep forgetting he did that.
You keep forgetting he had journalism?
Yeah. Well, because I can't imagine how arduous his articles must have been.
It's the 19th century. Everyone's writing arduously.
Oh, so he's like the best.
Yeah.
I guess at least good on him for being on the right side of the crowd here.
Marie wears a black satin dress to her execution. Supposedly, this makes black satin go out of fashion, but contemporary catalogs say otherwise.
Nothing's gonna make black satin go out of fashion.
Yeah, exactly. But what's really important is the souvenir pottery.
Well, I'm getting... Yeah, of course.
Figurines of both murderers are produced and sell very well.
What a conversation piece.
Oh, Staffordshire.
What's that on your wall? Oh, it's two people who killed a guy.
Which brings us to the Prince of Poisoners.
Admittedly the very coolest title.
William Palmer poisoned his friend John Cook for sure, and possibly also his brother, his mother-in-law, four of his own kids, and maybe his wife.
That's a really horrifying list, but I have to say, based on the nature of Britain at this point and surnames, I actually thought for like a quarter second that his name was John Price for sure. Jeremy. wow, that's a lot of fucking people.
Charles Dickens called him, quote, the greatest villain that ever stood in the Old Bailey.
Yeah, I'm not inclined to disagree, Mr. Dickens.
Did Staffordshire make pottery figurines of Palmer?
Yeah, of course.
Heck yeah, they did.
He's probably holding, like, a bottle of poison and a snake.
No, actually, we have some pictures.
Well, that's just embarrassing.
It is a man in a pink waistcoat, no hat. Standing with one hand on a plinth and one hand on his tummy.
Very chubby cheeks.
And you really wouldn't know that he was anybody special if it weren't labeled William Palmer.
Well, yeah, he looks like such a mama's boy.
They all do, they're figurines. Gonna be real rude to figurines for a second here.
I was gonna say, like, I'm gonna rip on figurines. I have several anime figurines that look nothing like this. Thank you.
You getting Staffordshire Gundams over here? Like, what are you doing?
Oh, could you imagine how cool that would be?
No, it would be just a lump.
I know it would be like, I want one of those, like, bosomy anime girls, but it's like a Staffordshire, like, press model. So it's just like, you can't, like, it's just a, it's like a mess. Oh, I really want it now.
Make some friends in the ceramics department. I'm sure we can get it going.
I feel like I've invented the tackiest possible thing.
Now, Dee, when I started telling you about murder porcelain...
Yeah.
You asked a very important question. Why?
Yeah.
Dear God, why?
Well, I'm getting that the distinct sense of money.
Well, money, yes. The rising middle class of the 19th century England loved two things. Murder and porcelain knickknacks.
What a combo. Has anything really changed?
No. Not really. Clutter was the foremost rule of Victorian interior decoration.
Yeah, we've covered that before.
You had a beautiful house if you had about 8 end tables per room and every inch of their surface was covered in porcelain figurines.
It gotta be.
Gotta.
What are you, poor?
And doilies.
Yeah. Well, what are the fucking figurines gonna sit on?
Exactly. So this was the trend until aestheticism caught on in the latter part of the 19th century and everyone was like, wait, if we fill our rooms with tables full of porcelain figurines, we can't move.
Took them that long, yeah. It's good.
I like how the porcelain figurines on end tables trend lasted throughout the hoop skirt era.
That must have been a really noisy time.
Can you just fucking imagine trying to navigate your parlor when your skirt is 8 feet wide And the entire room is filled with end tables carrying incredibly fragile, delicate porcelain figurines.
It's just tchotchkes and candles.
Yeah. So you're on fire and breaking everything you own every time you move from one chair to another.
What a fucking nightmare. Historical dress isn't bad, though, Ken. Just destroying your home. I like that it took years for them to realize that you should be able to inhabit your house.
Houses aren't for inhabiting, Dee. They're for showing off to the neighbors.
Even though they had to be told by Oscar Wilde. They didn't figure it out on their fucking own. They had to read a book.
Now, despite the wild popularity of murder and porcelain, these figurines are, as you might have guessed from the price tags, pretty rare today.
Is it because of the crinolines?
I mean, it is because porcelain is very fragile and does not often age well, given crazing and, you know, being dropped on the floor because you bumped it with your hoop skirt.
Yeah.
Some collectors theorize that because not many were sold, there aren't many today.
Hmm.
Which makes me wonder, like, okay, let's say they don't sell well. You make red barn figures, they don't sell. Why do you then go on to have every shop in Staffordshire producing red barn figures? And then also continue to produce figures for every other murder that happens afterward.
Yeah, I was going to say that there's something that doesn't follow there.
Either Staffordshire is entirely peopled with murderinos, and they're just making these things for their own fun.
For joy, yeah.
For sheer love of the craft. Or they were popular and people bought them.
Yeah, I'm actually going to lean towards the latter, because, yeah, it wouldn't have kept happening if it weren't at a point lucrative.
And happening over decades, because Red Barn Murder, 1828, Prince of Poisoners, 1856.
Yeah, big gap.
So my theory is that these figurines are rare today because almost nobody recognizes them as murder artifacts.
That's an interesting take, and I agree.
Because the William Palmer figure, for example, you don't know who he is, except that someone painted William Palmer on the base, and you don't know who that is, unless you're just obsessively Googling figurine labels.
Yeah, who would do that?
Yeah, what kind of weirdo?
But I mean, you're right, because I would pass over that.
The figurine of Emily Sanford is just her standing, holding a book and a handkerchief. The Manning figurines are, again, just them standing, him leaning on a plinth, her holding a handkerchief. They are completely indistinguishable from any other 19th century persons.
It would be very easy. I would also throw in the ring, that writing comes off pretty quickly.
The writing is just painted on, so it does rub off pretty easily.
Yeah. So there's probably a lot of them going around unlabeled.
It is entirely possible that there is undercover murder porcelain hiding in your house right now.
Oh my god.
Behind you.
You don't have any porcelain.
The Prince of Poisoners.
Oh, God. In front of me. The Prince of Poisoners, Jeremy.
No. He's the Stanfield Hall victim. Have I taught you nothing?
You've taught me several things. One is that I'm about to hit the estate sale market with renewed vigor. Because now I've got secret murder porcelain to find.
And that is the story of Victorian murder porcelain.
Damn, dog. Damn. Man, it's good to know people are always just sort of like cretins about shit.
Yeah, no, people have been creepy murder fans for several hundred years.
And I mean, I'm not trying to, like, I feel like at this point, everyone knows we're true crime bruffs.
We did just laugh through several murders. I think people have figured out by now that we are, in fact, ghoulish.
They're old murders, though. I'm not celebrating the fact that someone got murdered. Like, those people creep me out just as much, like...
But you do want Staffordshire murder porcelain?
Well, yeah, because it's historically... Listen, are you just gonna sit here and call me out on contradictory statements that I make out loud?
Yes! I am. And then we're going to fight about it, and then you're gonna tell me to meet you in the barn.
So anyway, do you want to go to the barn?
Don't I always?
Yeah, let's go to the barn.
Let's never not be in the barn.
We should just stay in the barn.
Forever.
Yeah. You ever wondered what it's like to be underneath the barn?
Oh, my God. Thoughts, feelings, questions, concerns?
I love it. It's so Victorian, it's almost painful. ugly little tchotchkes commemorating a horrible murder that somehow fails to represent what it is aesthetically in every single way.
They're very coy about their murder souvenirs.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like a little inside joke, which is something. I don't know how what to say about it. Like, it is what it is. It's bad. I'm surprised it's not a bigger thing. Like, everyone should know about this.
God willing, they'll listen to our podcast.
Let's tell the world.
I like how you're, like, speaking into a microphone, wondering out loud how we can inform
more
people.
How can we tell people about this?
If only there was some way to have our voice be heard.
And you can meet me in the red barn behind the Denny's. If I pull out a gun, that's just how I talk.
Oh my god, D. It's a pottery barn.
Oh my god. This whole time?
This whole time.
This whole time.
This whole time.
Has anyone told Pottery Barn?
No, let's go.
Meet me inside the barn.
So sources include the Wymondham and Attleboro Mercury article.
That sure, those words all mean, actually I'll be honest, only one of them means anything to me.
Mementos of Notorious Victorian Norfolk Murder fetch 1,420 pounds.
It's good.
Never accuse them of burying the lead. The Collector's Weekly article, Murder and Mayhem in Miniature, The Lurid Sale of Staffordshire Figurines.
Ooh, that's a good title.
Right? MyStaffordshireFigures.com is an exhaustive website if you want to learn anything about any Staffordshire figures. The Bonhams.com site had the lot The Red Bar Murder, a rare group of three Staffordshire models, circa 1828. AmusingPlanet.com had the article Victorian Era Murder Figurines. And,
of course,
the book that started it all, one of my favorite tomes, The Invention of Murder, How the Victorians Reveled in Death and Detection and Created Modern Crime by Judith Flanders.
Of course. If you're into this, that it's indispensable.
It's beautiful. I've read it three times. And of course, our perpetual source, Wikipedia.
God bless Wikipedia.
Donate to Wikipedia.
And if you don't want to, then you feel free to meet me in the red barn.
I don't think we can put that one on a poster.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Rad Barn. Can I say it now?
Oh, hell yeah.
Fuck yeah. That sounds like a good song.
We can copyright the Rad Barn.
Yeah. Shit. Pottery Barn. Rad Barn.
Yeah.
We just sell skateboards.
Yes.
And murder figurines.
If you would like to purchase some fine vintage goods.
I don't have any murder figurines before anyone asks.
We do have an Etsy at etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks, where you can get t-shirts, stickers, posters from Attack Bear Press, and a rather exhaustive collection of books from Dee's estate sale habit.
Habit is right, yeah. What I've got up is, how do you, Goeth? Goeth?
Goeth?
Goeth?
I've always called him Goeth.
It's beautiful. And my personal favorite, the chicken book, American Standards of Perfection for Fowl. It turns out is a very scarce volume. It is full of illustrations. It is a delight.
Excellent.
And more coming, good lord.
If you would like to talk about some murder porcelain, you can contact us directly at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com. Or you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/antiquesfreaks and join our Facebook group, Antiques Freaks Friends, where we will be posting pictures of secret murder porcelain.
We will. And perhaps posting murders of secret porcelain.
Sure. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com/antiquesfreaks, where you can listen to deleted scenes and join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month.
Like clockwork.
Yes.
You'll always know what month it is. Postcard month.
It's always postcard month. Special shout out to our current patrons for keeping the podcast lights on, paying our hosting fees, and getting us ever closer to a second microphone and producing bonus episodes.
And filling our hearts with love.
So much love. And thank you, particularly, for listening.
Especially you.
Especially you. Goodbye.
Bye.